Good morning. Nice to see you this morning. It's good to be with you. Kenner, thanks for that long reading you did. I wanted to have you read much more, but I thought that would be enough. So it was good to hear the message from Mike this morning on their plans on coming. I pray that'll be a good transition for them. It'll be good for the congregation here. Thank you for what you guys are doing now. Continue doing that. Continue reaching out and loving. And that's a beautiful thing. We had a kind of get together yesterday. My sister, my oldest sister, Cynthia, passed away about a year ago. So we got together with her kids and the rest of our siblings and had a little bit of a memory time of my oldest sister, who really was a blessing to all of us. And then last night we had our TCK group in, and Nitish is with me today. You may remember Nitish came with me a few months ago. He's here working on his master's in computer engineering from India. His father preaches in India. And so I asked Nitish to come with me today, and he's come along. He came to the dinner last night. We had 25 college students come over for dinner last night. And the good thing was, they cooked the meal. Wasn't that beautiful? They brought their favorite food from the country they've grown up in. So we really had an international smorgasbord at our house last night, and had a good group. And at about 11 o'clock, I said to those who were still there, I must be going to bed. I said to Nancy, what time did they leave? And she said, I was still hearing noises at midnight. So anyway, but we had a great group. And we have about another month of classes left at Oklahoma Christian. Our graduation is April 29th, I believe. And so we have a few weeks left to get everything finished up. And Nitish and I were talking all the way up here about different things that I'm hoping to share with my classes before we graduate, about how do you study the Bible? How do you look at it, put it all together? And a few other little things like that that is not in my syllabus, but things I think will be important for them to know. So today I'm going to talk about serving through the fog. When's the last time you drove in pretty soupy fog? When you get in a situation like that, isn't that the worst ever? You're driving along, you can't see anything, and you turn your lights brighter and it gets worse. You turn them down and no, that's worse. You just can't see. You're trying to find your way and it's very difficult. Guys, sometimes our life can be a little bit like that on, God, what do you want me to do right now? Which direction do you want me to go? And it's kind of soupy. We can't exactly see. Have you ever been there? Maybe you're there now. You're trying to, what is the next thing that I do? I want us to kind of look at Joseph's life. And there was quite a bit of Joseph's life that seems like, to me, he was operating in kind of a fog as to what should I do? And if you remember, and Kenner read about Joseph and those dreams he had, the sheaves of grain are bowing down to him. And then he told his brothers that. And what was the result of his telling them the dream? They hated him. And then he has the dream, the sun, the moon, the 11 stars bow down to him. And his father rebuked him for that dream. And his brothers became more jealous. But there's the dreams. Joseph, people are going to be bowing down to you. Your brothers, your mom, and your dad. And the next thing we know, what happens? He's sold into slavery. Do you think that things are looking a little bit soupy here? They're supposed to be bowing down to me, and I'm a slave. Are you kidding me? What do you do when things are not going like it seems like they should be going? And all of us have been there, haven't we? What do you do? It's not, you thought, I'm going to serve God, and things are going to go smoothly for me, right? And sometimes they don't go very smoothly at all. So what do you do? Well, Joseph, as we remember, he gets down to Egypt, Potiphar's, and he sold to Potiphar's household, and he served Potiphar. And what did it say about Potiphar's household? Everything prospered while Joseph was there. But what is Joseph doing, even if he can't make sense of things? He's serving Potiphar faithfully. He's serving, believing God is with him. Remember Potiphar's wife, she kind of made advances on Joseph, falsely accused him of some things. He's thrown into prison. How are those dreams looking for Joseph now? He's in prison. Who's bowing down to him? Nobody. What does Joseph do while he's in prison, guys? He faithfully serves in the prison, and the prison guard just says, I don't have any concern for anything. I'm putting everything under Joseph's care. There's a dream. Remember the cupbearer and the baker, and they have a dream? The cupbearer is told that he's going to be restored to his place, and the baker, not going to go so well for him, and he dies, and the cupbearer is restored to his position. And he says, and Joseph, what does he say before the cupbearer leaves? Don't forget me. Don't forget me, please. 2 years go by, and nothing happens except I'm still in prison. How do those dreams look right now? They're never going to be fulfilled, Joseph may be thinking. I'm always going to be in prison. And then we remember when Pharaoh has his dream, the cupbearer remembers, Joseph told my dream. Maybe you should send for him and see if he can tell you your dream. And so Joseph then comes in and interprets the dreams for a Pharaoh. He's elevated to number two in Egypt. But I'm sure he's still kind of thinking, how are these dreams going to be fulfilled? I'm here in Egypt. My family is all many hours away. They're supposed to bow down to me, and I'm stuck here. What is going on? If you remember chapter 42, people say it was about a 10-day trip from where Jacob and his family was living to Egypt. And about 2 years into the famine, Jacob and the family are getting hungry. So he says to the brothers, why don't you go buy some grain? And then it's pretty funny, you know, in verses 1 and 2, he said, just quit looking at each other and go get the grain. You know, so he sends 10 of the brothers. Who's left at home, guys? Little Benny, the younger brother, or Benjamin. But I'm sure they probably, if they were like Aussies, you shorten everything. And said, you know, he left him at home. We don't want him. I've already lost my favorite son, and he's the next one. I don't want to lose him. So here go the 10 brothers down to Egypt. It's interesting, isn't it, when they get there. Chapter 42, verse 8, Joseph recognizes his brothers. They didn't recognize him. What do you think Joseph looked like now, having lived in Egypt for a number of years? Think he walked like an Egyptian? Okay, sorry, that was bad, wasn't it? Do you think he talked like an Egyptian? Of course he did. He's been there for years. He's dressed so differently, they don't even recognize him. He sees him right away. And I'm sure he still doesn't understand what's happening. Okay, guys, what would you have said to your brothers? They sold you into slavery. They hated you. There they are. What would you say to them? Okay, let's don't say it out loud. You know, would you say, you are dirty rascals, you know? I can't believe you. What would you have said? What has Joseph done, guys, years ago? It seems like he's forgiven them years ago. He apparently has let it go. Guys, forgiveness is so powerful, isn't it? I if this was me, I'm not sure I would have responded the way Joseph did. I think I might have said, let's see, who of you was saying, let's sell him to the slave traders? Huh? Who was, oh yeah, would you come over here? I have something I want to share with you. And it wouldn't have been pleasant. You know, I don't know what I would have done. I don't think I would have responded like Joseph. But Joseph sees them and he doesn't get angry, doesn't scream at them. At this point, he's probably been in Egypt for 20 years. And it seems like all the way through, he's just kept serving God and people. He didn't let this build up anger and resentment where he was no good to anybody. Natisha and I were talking on the way up here this morning. I know I have a friend, his brother was murdered by someone else. Murdered. A guy that he had helped a lot. For several years, he said, if I could get close enough to him, I would break his neck. Well, the brother has killed two people in that incident. I mean, the murderer killed two people. He killed the brother, and then he killed the older brother that was still alive in his heart. Because he wouldn't. And the anger and hate was eating him up. Eating him up. I said, I know this is hard, but somehow you have to forgive him, or he wins in your life. Joseph could have just stayed angry. And do you think he would have done very well in Potiphar's house? Probably not. Do you think he would have been doing very well with Pharaoh? I don't think so. But he's forgiven his brothers. They come in, and he doesn't take them out and scream and yell at them. He's about 39 years old, or having them beaten, or any number of things he might have done. Joseph, as you remember, calls them spies, and they say, no, we are brothers, your servants, in chapter 42, verse 11, we are brothers, your servants are honest men. What would you have said to that? Oh, really? Yeah, what did you tell Dad when you got back home after you sold me as a slave? What did you tell him? You're honest men, huh? Right. You know, he could have gone there, but he didn't. Verse 13, they say there are 12 sons. The youngest is with the father, and one is no more. Well, what happened to him, Joseph could have said. Where's that one that is no more? You know, there's a lot of places he could have gone, but Joseph doesn't. But he does put them in custody 3 days. And verse 19 of chapter 42, he says, if you are honest, you said you're honest, if you are honest, and go back and get your younger brother, and one of the brothers should stay here. And he says, don't you come back without your youngest brother. He really wanted to see Benjamin. And verse 21, what did the brothers say? Surely we're being punished because of our brother. He was distressed. He pleaded for his life, and we ignored him. And now God is getting us, the brother said. Are these brothers living in the fog too? They don't know why God has, you know, how God is going to use what they did. I'm not sure that God caused them to do that, but God used what they did for good. But they're confused. Joseph is confused, I'm sure, about how all this is going to play out. They didn't realize that Joseph understood everything he was saying. He sent the 10 brothers home. What does he put in the top of their grain bags? Their money, and sends them back. And then when they get home and they see that, they say, what do they say again? What has God done to us? Guys, when something unusual happens, why do we blame God? The first thing they do is blame God. I'm not sure God had done that to them. God was kind of blessing them and letting them have their money back, but they go straight to blaming God. And I'd say, guys, they're living in a very foggy situation right now. Chapter 42, verse 36, Simeon stayed in Egypt. Jacob sees the boys, and then he sees when they get home, he sees his boys. He sees the silver in their bag. Joseph is no more. Simeon is in Egypt. And now he says, you want to take Benjamin down with you to Egypt. Chapter 42, verse 36. And what does Jacob say? Everything is against me. Does it sometimes look like everything is against you? But is everything against him as we know how the story turns out? No, it just looks that way right now. He's looking in a very soupy, foggy, he just can't see it. And he's saying, everything is against me. No, God is working even right then to save his family. But when times look bleak, what do we do? I hope when times look bleak, guys, we just keep on serving God and being faithful, knowing he is working. Am I saying nothing bad will ever happen to you? No. Am I saying everything will turn out exactly like you want it? No. But I'm saying you're working, walking with God, and instead of saying everything is against me, just remember God is there with us. I'm doing a story of the New Testament right now. I'm in the book of 2 Timothy. And at the end of 2 Timothy, Paul says, everyone has forsaken me. Everyone is gone. He said, but the Lord stood by me. Guys, when sometimes things are just bleak, and it feels like no one's with us, but we remember God is with us. Everything is against me, but Jacob, remember, the Lord is there with you. I think Jacob is in a pretty foggy spot. Joseph is down in Egypt. I got my brother in prison. What is this all about? What is happening? His brother in prison is surely thinking what's going on. And they're all just not understanding how God is working to bring about good for their family. Chapter 43, there's a long discussion about going to Egypt. Reuben says, I will bring Benjamin back home. Let me be in charge. So here's Benjamin. We're going down to Egypt, the most powerful nation in the world. And what does he say? Don't worry, I'll bring him home. How's that going to happen? One guy against Egypt? Well, apparently Jacob didn't trust Benjamin very much, because he doesn't go for that. And then Judah finally convinces Jacob that he will bring Benjamin home. Send him with me and I'll bring him home. And somehow Jacob agrees that if Judah is in charge, I don't know what's going on there. That's an interesting thing, isn't it? Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Judah's number four. Reuben's number one. But Jacob doesn't agree to let number one be in charge. The number four, for some reason, he says, okay, I'll send Benjamin back. Verse 11, Jacob says, take double the silver, the best produce of the land, bring balm, honey, pistachios. Wow, I like pistachios. Myrrh, and he says, remember, and then take these gifts to the man in Egypt. Do you guys remember when Jacob was coming back to meet Esau after they'd been apart for years and years? They said, hey, your brother's coming to meet you. He's got all these armed guys coming. What did Jacob do then? Sent gifts ahead. And this seems to be the same thing he's resorting to here. Let's send them some goodies from our homeland. Verse 22, in Egypt, they meet Joseph's steward, and they say, we brought the money back. And he said, it's all right, don't be afraid. Your God has given you this treasure. Wow. And they're looking at an Egyptian guy who probably has a lot of idols. Well, no, they do have a lot of idols that they worship. And he's saying, your God is taking care of you. I'm sure that was confusing to them. Verse 26 of chapter 43, Joseph sees his brothers. He asks about his father, and he says, is that youngest brother with you? And he didn't obviously identify him yet, but then verse 30, when Joseph saw Benjamin, he was deeply moved, and he hurried out of the room, and he cried. I wonder why he cried. Was it because Joseph was his brother with the same mother? Did Benjamin look a little bit like his mother? Did it remind him of all the good times he could have missed, that he could have had with? I don't know, but he goes out, he sees him, and he just runs out of room. Imagine seeing the second guy in charge of Egypt, and he runs out of the room after he sees one of you. And then he stays out for a while, and he cries. Verse 33, he serves them a meal. Don't you love this? He puts the oldest down to the youngest. And they're all looking. He says, okay, I would like him to go first and sit down. They think, okay, yeah, that's all right. Simeon, would you go next? Doesn't call him by name, but next one. And it puts them all in order. Don't you think they're going crazy at this point? And then here comes the meal. Who gets the most? Benjamin. How much extra? Five times as much as all the rest of them. And they're probably saying, we are in big trouble here. You know, he's showering extra food. And, you know, the weird thing, Joseph kind of got in trouble with his brothers because what did his dad do? To Joseph, showed him favoritism, gives him the coat, gives him extra stuff. And now what is Joseph doing to the younger brother? He's giving him extra, and the other brothers may not like that very well. Chapter 44, they had the grain, and they said, it's time to go home. And you remember that they put Joseph's silver cup in the top of one of the bags. The bag of who? Of Benjamin. I have this question for you. Everyone with me? If you had been down there before and you had received grain and they'd put the money in the top of your bag, would any of you have checked your grain bag before you start back home the second time? See if there's any setup there. Well, apparently they're so excited about getting the grain, so confused about, he put us in order. What? How did he do that? They didn't think to look for the silver cup or anything else. So they're heading home. The steward comes from Joseph's steward, and he stops and says, one of you has taken my master's silver cup. How could you have done this to my master? He's so good to you. No. You know, they're all saying they didn't do it. They find the silver cup in Benjamin's bag, and the brothers are all upset. Judah says he will stay if Benjamin can return to the father, and if not, the father is going to be grieved and go to his grave in sorrow. He's already lost one son. If he loses this son, he just won't be able to take it. Please. Well, Judah has learned some things maybe from Joseph many years ago, and he at least is going to say, I'm going to do what I can. It's not going to happen again as much as possible. Chapter 45, they come back to Joseph. Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. I'm your brother Joseph. And he weeps loudly. What do you think those brothers did? They were terrified, weren't they? They were scared out of their brain. And then Joseph says, it's at verse 30, they were terrified in his presence. Chapter 45, verse 4, come close to me. Can you see that scene? The 11 brothers stand there, come close to me. Do you think one of them gets behind the other one and starts just kind of nudging him forward? And another one gets over here and pushes him up there, and you're kind of trying to get at the back. You know, sometimes in photos where I try to get kind of close to, the older I get, the further to the back I want to be in photos. Well, that's another matter, isn't it? But you can see them. I don't think any of them were rushing up when he said, come close. Oh, Joseph! You know, they're scared out of their brains. So, to me, that is just a really funny scene there in some ways. Verses 5 through 7 in chapter 45, the fog begins to lift. Joseph said, God sent me here to save you. Don't be distressed by what has happened. And then later we read in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, you must know you meant what you did for evil, Joseph says. Chapter 50, verse 20, you meant it for evil, but what happened? God meant it for good. The fog has finally lifted. They finally see God was working in all of this. Even in the slavery, even in the accusation by Potiphar's wife, even with the cupbearer forgetting Joseph, the hard times, the bad times, God was working through it all. They meant bad things. Guys, people will mean bad things for us sometimes today. And sometimes we get in this place, why is all this happening? What is going on? And I hope that we will, Jacob says, everything is against me. No, God was working at that point in time to bring his family deliverance. He just couldn't see it. And sometimes we can't see it. I'm thinking of the apostles in Matthew chapter 16. I think that's the first time Jesus said to them, after he's done many miracles, taught a lot of people, done all sorts of things, he says to them, we're going to Jerusalem, and when we get there, I'm going to be arrested. They're going to do bad things to me, and then they're going to kill me. The apostles operated for a few years in a bit of fog themselves. You're what? Chapter 17, chapter 8, he repeats that several times. They can't understand it all. What did they all want to be? The greatest in the kingdom. Put me on your right hand and on your left hand. They just didn't understand clearly, and God kept trying to explain it to them. And then after the death of Jesus, his crucifixion, and his resurrection, they begin to see more clearly. So guys, a lot of times, Bible characters, us today, we live in kind of a foggy place. And I think the story of Joseph hopefully will help us to realize if we're in a fog, you just do what? You keep serving. You keep loving. You keep walking the right way. Will people try to trip you up? Potiphar's wife. How easy in some ways would that have been for Joseph, thinking all these bad things happen, here's this lady that really, really likes me. Wow, isn't that good? Some other people hated me, and now I'm a servant, and here's this lady that really likes me. Wouldn't that have been easy for Joseph to give in to that temptation? But what did he do? He kept his focus on God, kept his focus on serving him and walking with him. Guys, I just want to encourage you, times get foggy. I mean, Nancy and I, we've had some times in our lives that we didn't know what to do. When we moved here to 29th in 1980, we believed God wanted us to go to Australia. You guys had said, we will support you. We had a pretty clear in our mind what we thought God wanted us to do, and we were making plans to do that, and you guys just kind of helped us bring those plans to fruition and actually go and help people come to know Christ in another country. When we got finished with that, we were foggy. When we moved back here, we were real foggy, And some of you realize that. We just didn't know what to do next. Where did God want us to serve next? What did he want us to do? Some bad stuff happened. Hard stuff happened. Through some of those hard things, God has shown us other things that we can be involved in to minister in his name. Having those 25 TCKs over last night, kids from other countries trying to adjust. We would have never done that if we hadn't had the hard times, foggy times. And I just encourage you, right now I'm in a little bit of fog. What do I do next? Do I stay at OC? Do I do something else? And all of us have those times where you can't really kind of see where do I need to stay where I am, or do I need to do something else? So all I know that I can do is come and preach today, teach my classes for the rest of the semester, keep walking with God and doing the things he wants me to do, and believing he is walking with me and he will help me know what to do next. But all of us, in wherever we are, foggy, sometimes even in clear, we keep walking and keep serving God. I hope Joseph's life, a life of pretty amazing faith, a young boy, maybe 17 or 18, sold, goes to another country, and just lives for God with very little, if any, support. I hope his story encourages you to say, I'm gonna walk with God. I have a lot more revelation than Joseph did. I don't even know what revelation he had at that time. Do you? Didn't he have the Ten Commandments? They weren't given. The law wasn't given. We've got all of this compared to what Joseph had. Yet he walked with God through the fog, through whatever is happening, to serve God faithfully. I hope that will encourage you and that we will all want to do the same in our life. Seek God, seek his ways, and walk even when we can't see clearly what we believe he wants us to do. If there's someone that's not a Christian and you need to come to Christ this morning, we'd encourage you to make that decision today to follow him. Things may be foggy in your life. Maybe God wants you to begin serving him and living for him today. If you need to come and confess your sins, confess your faith in Christ, and be baptized into him so your sins can be taken away, we'd like to encourage you to do that today. And if there's something in your life we can pray for that you need the prayers of this congregation, we'd be happy to do that too. And we encourage you to come. We're going to stand together and sing. If you need to respond, please do that now.